America behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com.
And my name is Ben Bolin. I hang with you. You're Scott.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Ben.
Yes.
We've got more good info for everybody here. We've got, remember our last episode where we had some leftover material from Nuts and Bolts?
Part 4, a cliffhanger ending.
That's right. Yeah. Well, we're going to pick it back up again here because we've got plenty of material here to talk about. So let's get started.
Okay. So, Kelly writes in to say, "Hey guys, love the podcast. I just listened to the promotional vehicles episode about Ben wanting a car that looks like a cheesesteak. It made me think of a vehicle near me for the Westport flea market near Kansas City. It looks like a cheeseburger. By the way, they have awesome cheeseburgers." Kelly, thanks for writing in. And also, Kelly put a link to the photo of this thing. I just got to say, I remember recording that episode, and I had the cheesesteak fever upon me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had to be satisfied.
Understood.
I think I actually went directly from here to a cheesesteak place.
That's not
a
bit, since then, I've probably had 4 or 5 myself.
Wow, man.
I know. I love them. I try them everywhere because you never know how good they're going to be.
How I envy your life. I can maybe squeeze in one, you know?
No, when we eat out, I tip. That's what I'll go for.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'll look for in the sandwich column. But all right, you ready to move on here?
Let's go.
All right. Here's one thing that I forgot in one of the podcasts. We do this often.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about the Tornado.
Ah, yes.
Oldsmobile Tornado.
Uh-huh.
Remember that? The front-wheel drive engine? All right. Guess who has a Tornado that has 1,070 horsepower?
1,070?
1,070 horsepower.
Oh, it's no fair for me to guess, my friend, because you told me.
Jay Leno. Jay Leno has a 1,070 horsepower Tornado. Now, it's not a front-wheel drive, of course,
mm-hmm.
because that would have been ridiculously expensive.
Right. So how did he do it? That's the question.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got this crazy GM prototype engine,
mm-hmm.
That, of course, he's got a lot of friends at GM, and, they supply him with whatever he needs, I guess, for his shop here. But it's a restored – it basically looks like a stock Tornado.
Mm-hmm.
And, 1,070 horsepower in a Tornado.
Like
it uses C16 fuel to get that, right? Okay. Now,
right.
93 octane is premium, I guess,
mm-hmm.
on the West Coast. C16 is a specialty racing fuel that you can purchase. You do have to buy it, you have to buy it through the mail or you have to go, find a supplier, local supplier.
From like a racing part distributor
exactly,
or something.
Yeah. And it's typically used in turbocharged engines, blown engines, nitrous oxide, applications. Anything that has like up to a 17-to-1 ratio. Okay.
Okay.
It's recommended by all the nitrous oxide, companies, the ones that provide the systems. And it's also the spec fuel for NHRA Comp Eliminator Series. So.
Oh, and when we say ratio, we're talking about compression ratio.
Compression ratio. That's right. 17-to-1. So that's extremely high because mm-hmm. a lot of the compression ratio of this engine that he's got is 8.3-to-1.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about even like a top end performance car, like, let's say a Viper,
yeah.
something like that, you're talking about like 10-to-1. So 17-to-1 is way up there. That's a full out race engine. But, if you pay for the extra fuel or pay for the fuel and, pump it not from a gas pump, obviously, but,
right.
Add the fuel. This thing will put out 1,070 horsepower.
That's just mind blowing.
1,000 pound-feet of torque.
How could you possibly,
redline
that? How could you get that up to that?
I just don't even know. I don't know what that is like. I mean, it's got to be incredible. I'd love to hear it run.
Yeah.
I would really like to hear it run.
I'd love to hear him talk about it.
But, it's quite a setup. I mean, if you look at the specs on this thing,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them are prototype racing, engine parts that come from GM. So, that's how he got such a potent collection of parts really to put together this thing.
Cause he's got people on the inside.
Yeah. A lot of Corvette parts in this thing.
I call it conspiracy.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Okay.
Hey, what else do you have?
Let's see. Stumbled across something that I thought was kind of interesting. Two things. One thing was, you ever heard of the Oklahoma Full Auto Shoot?
Oklahoma Full Auto Shoot.
Yeah.
No, what's going on there?
I found a video of the Oklahoma Full Auto Shoot, and this is really weird. This is using military-grade weaponry. yeah, that's right. Yeah. To destroy cars in distant fields.
So it's exactly what it sounds like.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Because it's also full.
You're firing military-grade weaponry at cars in fields. And you're trying to make explosions happen because they have, you know, fuel tanks set up here and there. They have you're just pummeling these things. And some of them are set in motion before, you know, people are allowed to fire at them. You know, they're using mortar rounds. They're using all kinds of stuff again. Yeah. Yeah.
Mortar rounds.
I'm not kidding. Incendiary. You can watch video of this thing. It's again, Oklahoma, full auto shoot. Mm-hmm. And, families attend this event. Even kids are shooting these machine guns. I mean, I saw a 7-year-old shooting, an automatic machine gun at
cars.
Are you
serious?
At cars. Yeah.
I don't know if I, you know,
I mean, it's really cool. There are explosions. There's this hillside, this whole setup. It's like it looks like an apocalyptic scene. You know, it's really interesting, but you know, these people are under tents and they've got just piles of ammunition next to them, unlimited weapons. It looks like.
Is it BYOW?
You know what? I don't know that. I'm not sure. I don't have much more detail than that, but it's really interesting to watch. I'm sure you can dig up a lot more.
If we could go. Yeah, we should.
I don't know. And I think this one was held, I think this is a few years ago. So I don't know if they're still doing it or not.
Yeah, but hey, listeners in Oklahoma, get back to us if you know about this.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Take a look for it. It's something to see.
To say the least. Hasn't thought about doing that?
One other thing that I stumbled across I thought was kind of
cool.
And I've got a couple other things here, but that's it. I found something. Have you ever heard of a program called I've Got a Secret?
What?
No. It's from a long time ago. This is from
show.
Yeah, the game show.
Yes, I have.
1960s. Yeah. This particular one was from June 1st, 1961. Okay.
Okay.
And it was just a YouTube video they found. It's called I've Got a Secret. This is what it is. There's a host, a panel, and then a guest or two.
Right.
And this, in this case, there were two.
And the panel tries to guess the secret.
Yeah, the secret, whatever it is, but, you know, through a variety of questions and try to determine what it is. They come to consensus, they discuss what's going on and try to figure out the secret, right? And, you know, the guest is very, very straightforward with them. We'll tell them whatever they want, but, offers up no additional information.
Right.
Okay.
Like, is your secret something you did, or is your secret?
Well, are you a sports figure?
Sure.
Type of thing. That would be one question. And then, and then on and on. You can ask several. And, you know, over the course of the show, they figure out this person's secret or not. They take a guess. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching this episode and here's who it was. I'll just tell you who it was. It was AJ Foyt, who had just that year won the Indianapolis 500.
Mm-hmm.
And another guest who was Ray Haroon, who was the first Indianapolis 500 winner in 1911. Okay, so 50 years apart, two winners of the Indianapolis 500, right?
Yes.
And they did eventually guess who these guys were. Now, since it was June 1st, 1961, obviously AJ was just days off of winning the Indy 500.
Yeah.
And the other guy, the old timer there, was the first winner. And you remember that car that he drove, that Marmon Wasp, right?
Wow.
Okay, so that car is still on display if you want to look at it. They were talking about the cost of the car, and AJ's car. Now you know that current race cars are millions of dollars.
Sure,
I mean millions and millions of dollars, and not to mention everything else surrounding them. You know, just the transportation,
all the support
the team,
staff,
the,
transportation,
yeah, the,
maintenance,
the system, and everything.
Just the car itself is millions.
AJ Foyt's car in 1961. The cost of his Indy 500 car was about $30,000. $30,000.
1961.
1961. Okay. Which, pretty remarkable. I mean, I thought that was low. I thought
it was
going to be a lot
low.
Higher than
even
that.
Even adjusting for inflation, that's low.
I thought,
low.
Even in 1961, I thought this car was going to be a $200,000 car.
Sure.
Or more,
yeah.
Maybe. Just my own feeling. In 1911, they asked Ray about what his car was worth. And he said in 1911, he had put about $2,000 total into his car. That's it. That's the purchase price of the car, making it a race vehicle, really.
Yeah,
winning the Indianapolis 500, the first 500-mile race at Indianapolis.
$2,000.
$2,000. And now we're to the point where these are million-dollar vehicles, million-dollar-plus vehicles, really. So it kind of blew my mind. It was an interesting episode.
Yeah.
I thought it was worth seeing.
I wonder when it hit the J curve, because it sounds like somewhere in there.
Yeah.
There's a humongous.
Yeah, it's spiked.
Yeah.
It's spiked and it's way at the top now. So
What else you got for me?
Oh, boy, man. I've got a I've got a ton of these emails, but yeah. Let's see. Here's another one about break-in from Shines and Pines from the internet. That's it.
All right.
Talking about – this is about the Moto Man thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually – Moto Tune USA is the one that he mentions, break-in secrets. So there's that mention. Mm-hmm. Which is basically the opposite.
Right. This is the, is this the guy who, let's see, basically you push the engine much harder within the first 20 miles?
Yeah, that's the one.
And try varying the RPMs, nearly redlining it.
Oh, wait, maybe not. Maybe not. Yeah, but it's the opposite of the manufacturer's recommendations, really.
And he asked a great question.
Go ahead. Yeah, that's it.
The question is, who can really drive under 55 miles per hour for 500 miles?
That's
tell you what, not me.
That's what we asked during that episode.
That's
remember,
true.
We you can't do it. It's mm-hmm. too difficult. It's unattainable.
I feel like it is very difficult.
All right, I'm going to run through these quick. Okay,
yeah, yeah.
I got a bunch of these. Let's just go through and then one last little update and then we're done.
All right.
Here's one. Dear Brian and Scott.
All right.
I was like, wait, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. This guy's from Mumbai, India. Sachin. Enjoy listening to the podcast. It's become a bit of a routine after work. Loves cars. Wonder if we could do a podcast dealing with the materials cars are made of these days, which is a good one because you know, he
that
wants
is
to know
a good one.
how much and you know what type of material they're mm-hmm. made of because it's a lot of confusing materials at this point.
A lot of composites.
So that's a good one. Good suggestion.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Here's one named Kosi from New Zealand, but lives in the South Pacific, Tonga.
No way.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
Just writes in to say that his belief turbos are better, mostly because there's nothing like feeling like getting kicked in the gut by a turbocharged engine, especially when it's a twin turbo two stage. Wow. Twin turbo two stage in Tonga.
Wow.
Because it gives you a fast boost and second longest fuse. Oh, you know what? It says the island he lives on does not have any good cars. In fact, not much of a car scene there in Tonga, I guess, but says that our podcast give him his car fix. So there you go.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah. So Kosi from the Kingdom of Tonga.
Nice.
I don't know if we've ever heard of a listener from Tonga. Oh, here's my note about the BMW Vision.
Yes.
Let's see. Someone who had seen this is Joshua, who mentioned that he went to the Peterson Automotive Museum and saw the V8 car that we talked about, the product vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one that looks like a can.
Yeah, yeah.
A can of V8 juice, which is kind of neat. So
yeah, not V8, the engine.
Yep, and mentioned V8, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, too.
Mm-hmm.
Ariadne. Remember we've tried this name before?
Oh, yes,
okay,
we have.
It says, good afternoon, fellas. Oh, this is a good one. Took an airboat ride in the Everglades on Monday. The tour guide pointed out some Spanish moss growing from some trees down there and said that Henry Ford had sent some folks to the Everglades to harvest Spanish moss as seat stuffing for the first Model Ts. Soon after the Model Ts were launched, people were complaining of itches. It turns out that Spanish moss houses tiny mites, which will burrow underneath the person's skin and lay eggs within a few hours. It prompted a recall, and after that, the seats were stuffed with cotton. Ugh.
What a cool story.
Gross. That
Thank
is
you.
Gross. Yes, but that's really cool. That is disgusting and informative. Thank you.
Because Henry Ford is otherwise so reasonable.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He is such an ordinary human being.
Sure.
I can't believe something like that would happen. It's crazy. All right. Joseph writes in and says that, wants to hear about huge mining dump trucks. You know, the
gigantic
house size.
The ones that are like the size of a
building. Size. That's a very good one.
That is.
Propeller cars. Rob in London says, thought it was an interesting podcast, but we overlooked all-terrain vehicles powered by propeller, the hovercraft.
Yeah. Right.
I think we've talked about hovercrafts.
We have. I think we may have it in a different episode.
Audi Shark. The Audi Shark episode. If you look back to the Audi Shark mm-hmm. episode, Rob, I think you'll find some information about hovercraft, but maybe a full episode on that wouldn't be a bad idea.
And we have some other weird stuff that's mm-hmm. come out about that.
All right, here's David from Port Washington, Wisconsin. Consider doing a show on the Chrysler Airflow. It was a revolutionary step in car design, full of fun facts. That's right. This is the first aerodynamic design, or design meant to be aerodynamic. So the Chrysler Airflow is a cool car.
Nice one.
I'm getting through these, aren't I?
Yeah, you're
Garrett.
Knocking out.
Garrett says that mentions he this is about the fire engine episode.
Okay.
Started listening to the podcast recently. One of you mentioned the pike pole looked like a medieval weapon.
Mm.
That's probably you.
That was probably me.
Might be interested to know the first pike poles were pikes, which were weapons, used by settlers in the Jamestown colony to pull down the roofs of burning buildings in order to reduce the spread of the fire. And one correction, commonly the pump controls are found on the driver or operator side of the cab.
Ah.
Very good. So
thanks.
Thanks for the information. Nathan from Toronto, Ontario says, can you do a podcast about the Black Beast, which is Green Hornet's car? Black Beast? Black Beauty.
Black Beauty.
Black Beauty. It should be Black Beauty. That's right.
I thought.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Black Beauty.
Well, maybe we'll
but anyways, the difference between the movie car and the classic TV car show, if there are any.
Cool.
Here's one from Ryan. Wants to know about air-cooled engines, air-cooled VWs in particular, because he has a 66 VW Bug himself as a project car. He's 17, doesn't really know a lot about cars, but reads a lot about them and his own experiences. So we'll talk about air-cooled engines. That's a good one. You already read this one, Italy. Going through a couple here.
Yeah.
Oh, here you go. Well, Scott and Ben, I'd be honored if you'd discuss this on your podcast, which I'm listening to. I'm in Australia. I have an imported 1975 Cadillac Fleetwood 75, which is a factory limousine with the largest ever engine ever put in a factory car, the 500 cubic inch 8.2 liter V8. Now driving on the highway, I've noticed this car was significantly underpowered and had trouble maintaining 120 kilometers per hour despite using 160 liters over fuel.
Whoa.
Over 600 kilometers highway run. Okay. Well, I haven't just, you know, gone through and figured out what that is, but I'm guessing that's terrible.
Yeah.
It is
pretty bad.
So he wonders why the horsepower dropped because from 1970 to 76, the horsepower decreased from 400 horsepower in 1970 to 190 in 1976, despite the same size block. It suffers low power.
Yeah.
The problem is pollution control equipment. That's exactly right. It's all pollution control equipment and detuning. It was, you know, when you talk about performance versus fuel economy.
Yeah,
that's exactly what happened there. They just dropped it down for fuel economy, and they, you know, the catalytic converters came in at that point,
right?
And just totally choked the engine out. So there's a lot of things you can do to tune that back up to 400 horsepower if you want to. That was from Derek in Sydney, Australia, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
You do have to keep the catalytic converter on though, Derek.
I'm taking a breath here, but then we got one last one. Okay.
Let's do it.
And I'm going to simplify this one. I had the whole thing practically outlined, but this is from, is it Helmut? H-E-L-L-M-U-T-H?
Go for it.
Helmut. Okay, Helmut. All right. Regional education manager for Latin America and the Caribbean in the sales and marketing area for a large auto manufacturer.
Oh, I remember this email.
All right.
Yeah.
For my English-speaking countries, I consider you guys a must-listen since you have a knack about explaining automotive features without dumbing it down or making it fly over everybody's head.
Ah, shucks. He's talking to you.
Isn't that good? That's all right. So he mentions, you know what, mentions superchargers, turbochargers, the breaking in thing. Also talks about a storage podcast and tire pressures. And one of the things he mentioned was that when vehicles are making the cross ocean journey, really, to a new country, they often come with very high PSI levels and tires around 50 PSI. And that's to keep from flat spots from coming or becoming lopsided.
Right.
So those are always adjusted after they exit the boat.
Yeah, that is
kind of interesting.
That is a really interesting email.
And the other thing about breaking in engines is that part of it has to do with the materials. You know, they said the tolerances. We mentioned tolerances.
Right.
Part of it is that the blocks are made of aluminum, which basically can't be overhauled, at least from a cost point of view. And the shavings, which these engines are much smaller, and they aren't found in the engines once it's assembled. So,
good call.
Yeah. I mean, and he mentions, you know, the dry turn and the wet turn as well, and how they're all run through a certain system. And he also wanted to mention that we may want to look into the Toyota Land Cruiser because you won't be disappointed with looking into its history. You know, we all know the Ford history. Few of us know the impressive stories behind, huge companies like Toyota, GM, VW, and Chrysler. So he says, thanks for entertaining me on my commutes and flights. Keep up the great work. So that was from Helmut from, well, all over the place.
Yeah, he's
everywhere. He's everywhere.
You got one more thing, or do you want me to sum up before?
What are we at an hour now? Have we done an hour here?
Oh, well, good.
But you know what, though? You know what? We've answered a lot, or we've at least read a lot of listener mail. And,
I guess we have.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Last thing?
project car update?
Yes, please.
You want to talk about it? I'll make it quick.
No, I want – yeah, do you the project
car. Okay, this is my project car.
Right. So as everybody knows, our favorite auto editor has gone in and has a project car. You can find out a little bit about the backstory, but what we're going to do to end this episode is to have the update. So tell me.
Just a slight update, really short, because I'll tell you, winter time is not a whole lot going on right now. It's been a bad winter here.
Yeah, we actually had snow.
Yeah, a lot of snow. A lot of snow and ice. So time working on the car has been pretty scarce. A lot of things going on. So basically the heater core's in. It's a 1967 Chrysler Newport, if anybody has the need to know. Right. The heater core's in. The leak stopped. It runs well, but I have a feeling that none of the HVAC system is going to work, Ben.
And,
you know, that's sad to say after I've done all this work. I haven't got the dash all the way back in, but there's some complicated linkages there. And when I went into this thing, I'm thinking it's only going to be a couple of days before I'm putting it back together.
Sure.
Big mistake. I should have taken lots of photographs of this thing when I took it apart. And that was major, major mistake because now I can't figure out how some of these linkages go back together. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of resigned to the fact that the heater portion of my HVAC system isn't going to work. I think the vents will still work and the cool air and, you know, everything else should work fine. The heating system, I'm not exactly sure about as far as the valves opening and closing at the right time. So I may have heat all the time or I may have heat none of the time. I'm not sure. It's going slow. It's going pretty slow, but it does run really well right now. You know, it needs carb adjustments and, you know, the usual stuff, but, it hasn't been driven in a while. It's been months actually at this point. I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, when I did this whole thing, I should have treated it almost like a crime scene. You know, shot my way into the system and then not have to worry about it coming back out, but I would have had a way to trace back what I had done. So that was a major mistake on my part.
Well, it's all part of a learning process. As long as you're learning something.
I am learning.
It's not a huge mistake.
Painful lesson.
Painful is the price of an education.
Well, we'll see how it goes. It may work just fine. We'll find out.
And while we're talking about things that may work, let's recap real quick. We're going to get out of here, guys. We've got some great offers for upcoming podcasts. Write to us and tell us what you think. Should we do a podcast on modified tuning scene, on locomotives, on colliders, the materials used in cars, building size dump trucks, the Airflow or the Land Cruiser, the Green Hornet's car? Should we talk about some air-cooled vehicles? Or should we talk about something else? You can let us know through the various internet stuff if you're savvy that way with Facebook and Twitter. You can also hit us up directly at our email
at carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. To learn more about the podcast, click on the podcast icon in the upper right corner of our homepage. The HowStuffWorks iPhone app has arrived. Download it today on iTunes.